Welcome to The Romantic Side of Suspense with Sarah Hemmerker. In each episode, she'll talk with your favorite romantic suspense authors. They will take you behind the scenes of the writing process, giving excerpts from their writing, and share stories about their writing life.
Hello, and welcome to The Romantic Side of Suspense. I'm your host, Sarah Hemmerker, and I'm so glad you joined me. This episode, you're going to hear about this month's new releases in Christian romantic suspense. I hope you will enjoy hearing from your favorite romantic suspense authors as they talk about the background of their latest books.
My next guest is Dana Lynn. She's going to be telling us more about her latest romantic suspense, Protecting the Amish Child. So welcome back to my show, Dana.
Thanks for having me, Sarah.
So what did you call your heroine in this story, and why did you decide to pick that particular name?
My heroine in this story is Francesca Brown. She goes by Fran. And when I first developed the character of Fran back in, I think it was 2020, I wanted her name to, I wanted readers, when they heard her name, to visualize somebody who was more sophisticated. She has the background of a, you know, she's born into an elite, wealthy family. There were a lot of expectations that were put on her by that family, expectations of the life she'd live, who she'd marry, what she would do. You know, she's basically groomed to be a modern-day socialite. And the fact that she is not living that life now, I wanted my readers kind of to be wondering, what changed? Why isn't she who she was brought up to be?
Oh, I
and
love
I thought
that.
Francesca was kind of, Francesca was kind of a more unusual, sophisticated name for that.
Yeah, and I love that you get to call her Fran. That's such a fun nickname. So Yes, I do too. It's fun. So what's holding your hero back from finding love in this story?
Well, my hero, Tanner, we first met him back in 2020 as well. And he's a strong, brave, kind of nerdy kind of guy, but he put himself in the line of attack at one point, and although you can't see it by the clothes he wears at the beginning of the book, he has some very, very, nasty physical scarring on his arm and his back. And when it happened, he didn't think anything of it. It was just part of the job. But he had some rather negative reactions from other people in his life. I don't want to give it away what those reactions were, but it made him question whether he could find somebody who would not be repulsed by his physical appearance. So he doesn't let himself get too close.
Yeah. Well, I bet Fran's going to have something to say about that. Ha. So let's talk about the villain, and feel free to use the they pronoun if you need to cloak the identity. But why this person as the villain in your story?
Okay, so this is an interesting thing about this particular book. I'm trying to get out of it, but I am by heart a panther, which means that even though I have a loose synopsis, I don't always know when I start writing my story. I don't always know who my villain is going to be or how the story is going to end. And for this particular book, I had a completely other villain in mind. And I was writing the story with that villain in mind. And then I got to about two-thirds of the way through the book, and I was just like, wait, no, they didn't do it. This person did it. So the villain really kind of surprised me, and I had to go back and rework some things because this villain kind of snuck up on me. So after that, it was just like, oh, yeah, that's exactly what happened. So that's how it came to be. It was as much of a surprise to me as it will be to the readers.
I am glad, Dana, that I'm not the only panster person who sometimes is like, oh, yes, that's who it is. Thank you for telling me. Moving on with my story. Yeah, you've just relieved my mind. So, but don't want to go too down another rabbit hole. So let's talk about the setting of this story. How does it move this story forward?
Okay, so in my story, it is set in a fictional town, Sutter Springs, Ohio. And Sutter Springs is a town where the English and the Amish live side by side. It's partly a touristy attraction, a growing tourist attraction for those who want to see the Amish, but it's also very rural in parts. There's a lot of twists, a lot of turns, some wild nature about. And what really helped is I needed reasons why my hero and heroine wouldn't always have the backup that you would expect them to have in this kind of situation, you know, where you've got a child at risk, where you've got, you know, people coming for them. I had to have reasons why Tanner and Fran were going it alone and not always having what they needed. And the setting provided that perfectly because anyone who lives in rural Ohio and rural Pennsylvania knows there's dangers just in the fact that we don't always have the gravel roads. Our roads aren't always marked. We have the twists. We have the turns. We have the hills. We have lots of places where we have a cellular blackout, where you don't have the cover, so you can't always call for help. I mean, that is part of our daily life. So it helped build the suspense a lot.
So you mentioned when you talked about your characters that you kind of introduced them, it sounds like, in 2020. So why this particular story? How they seemed like they had to wait a while for their story to be told, but why did you want to write this particular story?
Well, I had to give them some time because when I first introduced Fran and Tanner back in Amish Cradle Conspiracy, and that book, trying to think, that was, I think, like 6 books ago. I mean, it was a while ago. But when I introduced them back then, Fran had had been widowed not too long ago. So, yeah, that book came out in June of 2022. So it's about 2 years ago. So I had to really let Fran have some time to get through the grieving process. And so I went ahead with other stories in which you saw little bits of Fran peppered in here and there. Not too much. You might have seen Tanner once, maybe not. But I wanted to give her character enough time. Because when I write these books, even though it sounds strange, like when I write a story, I literally keep a real calendar on hand. So I will mark, you know, this is when the husband died. This is when this happened. This is when. So in my mind, even though the reader's not thinking this, I'm thinking, oh, you know what? This just happened. So I needed to give my mind time to let her grieve too. I know that sounds weird, but it's just the way my mind thinks. So I wasn't prepared to write her story yet because in my mind, she hadn't had enough time.
Right. Yeah. Well, you know, our characters are real to us, so we gotta make them realistic. Well, I appreciate you sharing about protecting the Amish child. Let's close our short time, Dana, with what is your book's tagline?
My tagline for the story is a killer in pursuit and a little boy's life is at stake.
Ah, I love that. Well, thank you again for sharing about this book.
Yo, thank you for having me. I enjoy talking about it.
Next up, I have Susan May Warren with her latest book, One Last Promise. So welcome back to my show, Susan.
Thanks, Sarah. It's so great to be here.
So let's talk about your heroine in One Last Promise. What did she want to be when she grew up, and did she become that person?
Well, my heroine is a really complicated person. So she presents herself as Tilly the waitress throughout the first two books. And then we find out in this book that she's someone completely different. And I didn't want her to be like a spy or an undercover cop, but Tilly is a person with a lot of secrets. I think I could probably not give anything away when I say that first she was a Marine. And so she was in the military. She actually was a corpsman, and she served with the Marines as a Navy corpsman. And so that was kind of one layer of hidden identity for her. But she always wanted to be someone who could take care of herself and succeed. And so her background is very, very layered. And one of the things we find out is she's a lot more capable than she lets on. And so being a waitress was not her goal, but being someone that could be capable and take care of herself is. And so she launched herself into a number of professions that the reader's going to find out about and, of course, play into the story as the plot goes on.
Ah, yes. Those waitresses, you have to watch out for.
Right. They are not always who they are.
Yeah,
that's right.
Not always
you never really know.
Yeah,
I know. I love it when there's a character who presents herself as one thing and then they're totally different. And so that was really fun to write.
Yeah, I imagine it was. So let's talk about your hero. And sometimes our heroes have fears. So what is your hero's greatest fear in this story?
Well, my hero's name is Moose, and the reader will find out his real name in this particular book, which is fun. But Moose is the pilot for the Air One rescue team, and Moose has a pretty extensive backstory as well. But one of his greatest fears is losing someone that he's supposed to take care of. So one of his backstory issues, and we talk about this in previous books, and so this won't be a surprise, but he had a guy that he was flying, and their plane went down, and he tried to carry the guy out because it was a blizzard, and they couldn't stay there. He tried to carry him out, and the guy, he survived, but he lost his foot, and then later on he died. And Moose has always felt that this was his fault. And so when Tilly comes to him and says, please help me, and for various reasons, he's like, absolutely, I'm in. Because he's made this rapport with Tilly, he cares for her, he actually reached out to her in a previous book, wanted to ask her out. And so for him, her issues become his issues, and he doesn't want anything to happen to her or the people that she cares about.
Ah, yes. Love the silent man who, or he might not be silent, but has that great backstory, and you're like, it's not your fault, but yes, I know.
Yeah. And he is kind of a silent guy, but he's full of wisdom. Moose is like the strong, silent, wise guy. Not wise guy like in snarky, but like the wise man who says the right things.
Yeah.
And he's really taken apart by this woman that desperately needs him, but also she's hiding a secret, and it's a pretty big one. And so when he finds out about it, he's like, I don't know if this is right for me. So anyway, it's a fun story.
Yeah, so, and again, this story is a continuation of this current series that you're writing on. So tell us about the setting and why the setting.
So it takes place in Alaska, but it's not in Copper Mountain like the previous book was. This is back in Anchorage, and actually only half of the story takes place in Anchorage. Of course, there's lots of Ruskies and things like that. In fact, the first scene takes place on a glacier, which is super fun. But then I go to Florida for some of the story, which is really fun too, because I go down to Miami. And so I wanted some interesting different things to happen in the story, and part of that was the location. So I really wanted to put Moose a little bit out of his element and put him into a really, really warm location and see what happened down there. So it's kind of half and half. It's the extremes, right? Alaska, Florida.
Yeah. That I don't think you could have picked two states that so different.
Yes,
that's
for
funny.
Sure.
Yeah, I was going to say, what was the hardest part? Go ahead.
Yeah, no, I was going to say, in some ways it's a metaphor of the two different characters of Moose and Tilly, because as Tilly becomes more of her persona, she becomes a little bit, let's say, hotter, and he is still kind of reserved and more Alaskan, you know, so I kind of use that too as a metaphor for them. So it was very fun to write.
Oh, that is fun. So, but speaking of writing the book, what was the hardest part of writing this particular story for you?
Well, the hardest part for me was making Tilly likable because Tilly has kind of an interesting past, and it's a past that not every reader, I think, is going to like. And so then I was like, what am I going to do with her to make her really likable? So I had to put in some save the cat moments, and I also had to put in a really good motivation for why she did what she did. And I had to give her some really big redeemable moments. And so it is a very poignant book, and I think it's a great story about looking beyond the what we see to deeper places and really trying to understand each other so that we can really have empathy and compassion for other people and really get to know them better.
Oh, I love that, the way we're able to use our characters to talk about truths like that. That's always, I think, really wonderful as Christian writers that we're able to do that. So what's one thing that you would like readers to know about One Last Promise?
Well, I think that in this particular story, I think it is about compassion and it's about understanding. So Moose has layers, but Moose is a great guy. But underneath Moose's great guy persona are some dark things, and he lets those out and has to reckon with them. He's got a lot of guilt and some issues with that, some promises he didn't keep, and Moose may or may not have done something bad. And so he's got to reckon with that. And Tilly, who's a waitress, also has this darker past. And so I think it really is about compassion, it's about understanding, and it's about taking the time to understand each other and also see the redemption that can happen over time as well, because both of these characters have this kind of darker past, but also are walking towards redemption and a better place, and just wanting to go on that journey with somebody and having the patience to see that there is something good ahead if we're just walk with them and wait for it.
I love that. Well, thank you so much for sharing about One Last Promise today.
Oh, you're welcome. Thanks so much for having me.
Next up, I'm chatting with Kate Angelo in her new book, Fireline. So welcome back to my show, Kate.
Hey, thanks for having me. I'm so excited to talk about Fireline with you.
So we're going to dive right in and get started with the heroine. And this is one of my favorite questions. So, if your heroine has or could have a pet, what would it be? And please tell us the name.
So, my heroine in Fireline, her name is Nova, and she's a smoke jumper. And so, when I saw this question, I was like, man, if Nova had a pet, I think she would have a cat, like an orange kitty cat that's called Fireball. That would just totally fit her. I think that would be her pet.
Yeah. So, yes, I love that. Fireball for the fire. Yep. Yeah. We can have so much fun with our characters. I love it. So, let's talk about your hero in this story. What's holding him back from finding love?
So the hero in this story, his name is Booth Wilder, and he is actually a smoke jumper as well, and he is living in Montana, and he's there like kind of in a witness protection situation because he was a Homeland Security agent, and there's a line in the book I love where she's like, this is not the safest witness protection that you could do because it's such a dangerous job. And but what's holding him back from love is part of it is that whole thing where he is in WITSEC and he doesn't know who he really is and what his life is going to be. And so that's kind of the thing that's been holding him back this whole time from really from his whole life and from finding love.
Yeah, I love the way we can, because that's true whether you're in WITSEC or not, we can have things in our life that's holding us back. So I love hearing how we put our torture our heroes and heroines sometimes. So
Definitely.
yeah, let's talk about your villain in this story. What's one redeeming quality about your villain?
So the villain in the story is kind of interesting because this is a 6-book series, and so there's a little bit of an overarching theme here. And one of the main villains, they're brothers, and they're really, sorry, I paused for just a second. My brain was like, What is the redeeming quality of a bad guy? It's always so hard. But so they're brothers, and they really feel like they're doing the work that their father wanted them to do to protect their land, because this is like in the Kootenai National Forest in Montana, and they feel like people are starting to encroach on their land, and so they aren't necessarily doing things the right way. They definitely have bad motives. But part of that is just from their father, who they're trying to redeem their father and live up to, like, his ideology.
And you already mentioned that this takes place in Montana. So if it's a real place, what's one thing you had to change to fit the story? Because we can do that as writers.
Yeah, I love doing that more so than – I like to write about real places, but mostly – I like to write about a place that's real that I can fictionalize. And so obviously we don't have the same kind of the same wildfire burning right now. So there's a little bit of that element. But something else that I changed to fit the story was the type of place where the smoke jumpers live. Like, there's some different base camps for smoke jumpers and for hotshots that are fighting these wildfires. And there's some, you know, all over, like, Idaho, and there's some in Missoula, and there's some in Alaska. And so I kind of took pieces of all of those and used it to sort of build the smoke jumper headquarters. And then it's obviously based off of one that Susie May Warren had written in a previous series as well.
Oh, fun. Fun to get all those details straight.
Yeah, I know. Definitely.
On a real place, but yet.
Yes.
We've changed this. Yeah. So what did you find was the hardest part of writing Fireline?
Well, I guess that is the hardest part about writing Fireline, is whenever you're working in this particular series, it's 6 books. And so we have different authors. We have 5 authors. We have Susan May Warren at the beginning, and she is at the end. And then we also have Megan Biesing and Michelle Sass Alexson, and then Lisa Phillips, and then me, of course. And so for all of us to write characters, for them to overlap, to have, like, the overarching like town and settings and villains. And so that was really the hardest part about writing the book. The second hardest part, if I can have one of those, was not spending so much time researching smoke jumpers and what they do and what that job is like. It's amazing that they, you know, that they work so hard. I mean, they, for example, one of the things I loved about it is that some of the guys who are right before they go out, they'll grab a frozen steak and they'll put it in their leg pocket. And they'll work all day with this frozen steak in their leg pocket. But since they're working so close to the fire, by the time that they get to sit and have dinner, it's actually thawed out enough for them to throw it on the campfire grill and have steak for dinner. So replenish their protein. So I thought that was so much research and not spending so much time just living in research was part of the problem for me.
Yeah. I know. Sometimes we find these fascinating things as writers, and we just keep going down those rabbit. But this. I'm like, no, I actually have to write the story. Get back to the story.
Yeah. So balancing that with, like, not being too technical, but trying to honor what they really do, and not really knowing much about smoke jumpers when I started. So all of those things were probably the hardest for me.
So we're going to close our short time together, Kate, with what's one thing you want readers to know about Fireline?
Oh, so I really think that readers are going to love Fireline because it's just fast-paced action, romance. There's so much going on. I think that they're going to love that. But what I think that it would be good for readers to know is that you can read it as just a standalone if you want to like skip over the first 4 and just dive right in. There's only a few things that you might question, but you definitely want to read the last book in the series because it'll close up some of those little those little loops that are in the setting and everything, and in the villain and things like that. So it'll kind of close up that whole series arc. But each of these books are really fast reads. They're not super long. You could read one a day. And they're perfect for the summertime and, like, you know, getting the kids back to school and things like that. So I think that readers are going to love this whole series.
Yeah, well, thank you so much for sharing about Fireline.
Thank you for having me, Sarah. I've had so much fun.
Now I'm going to be talking with Jessica West about her latest romantic suspense book, Fleeing from Danger. So welcome to my show, Jessica.
Hi, thanks for having me.
So how does your heroine feel about love at the start of your book?
Well, at the beginning of the book, her name's Lily. Lily's angry with God for snatching away everyone that she loves. And she's determined to keep her heart guarded. So she's not open to love at all at the beginning of the story.
And what about your hero? What's holding him back from finding love?
His name's Steven, and he likes the bachelor's life. He doesn't want a female tying him down or holding him back. And he doesn't think that he'll actually find love like his parents. So that's why he doesn't.
Well, I have a feeling that something may change in this book. Spoiler alert, we write romantic suspense, generally with happily ever after. So, but it's fun to get them there. Fun to get them there. So your villain of the story, who or what does your villain love the most?
Okay, I'm not giving his name out, but he loves himself the most, actually. But besides that, he's actually obsessed with the heroine, and even to the point of murdering other people just to get to her. So himself and then the heroine.
Ah, yeah, that selfish love, it gets our villains into trouble all the time.
Yes.
So true. So let's talk about the story setting. Why did you want to set Fleeing from Danger in this particular setting?
It's in East Tennessee, and my family and I moved to Tennessee in 2022. So last year, I started writing my mystery suspense series in this location. I don't know if you've ever been in Tennessee, but it's really beautiful here, and it's a nice setting.
So you wanted to write it in your new, to kind of have that as the backdrop because it's your new home.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah. I know, we like to write what we know. Sometimes we write what we don't know, but sometimes it is easier just to write what we know. I totally understand that.
Yeah, it is. Definitely. Yeah. Like, description-wise, you just look outside, it's easier to write.
Yes, that's always nice. So what about the underlying positive message of the story? Sometimes we can tackle some pretty kind of dark subjects and stuff, but I like to think when we write Christian romantic suspense that there is an underlying positive message. So what's yours in this story?
Yes. So for this one, it's even in life's darkest days when it seems like God's so far away that he's right there walking beside us. He's carrying us through the valleys. Sometimes life doesn't make any sense, but even then, you know, we can trust God.
Oh, I love that. That's sure to resonate with many readers. Well, we're almost at the end of this interview. Let's wrap it up with, what's one thing you want readers to know about your book?
The biggest thing is, sorry. When they read my book, I don't want them to, the takeaway to be, you know, the great characters, although I want that, and the great storyline or the suspense. But the whole outcome of the book, when they get done reading it, I want them to remember that God is good and that God doesn't change. You know, that's the whole reason why I write. The storyline's fine, mystery, but it all needs to point back to him. That's the main thing.
Oh, I love that. Well, thank you so much for sharing about Fleeing from Danger today, Jessica.
Yes, thank you very much.
Now I'm going to talk with Lynette Eason about her latest romantic suspense, Target Acquired. So welcome back to my show, Lynette.
I am so glad to be here. Thank you for having me.
So let's talk about names. Why did you pick this particular name for your heroine in this story?
For the hero, his name is Cole. Okay, so here's the thing. When it comes to names, I have this thing. I look at what other names I have picked, and did I use that first letter in any of them? And I pick a name that I haven't used the first letter and any other names because publishers are like, it's kind of like the rule of writing. Don't use the same letter for any of your first names throughout the story. So, I mean, it does happen, but it's supposed to not confuse the readers if you use start a different starting letter for each name. So I type in male names, and I picked the year he was born, like 1990 something, whatever, and then 80s probably. And I look at the popular names and I'm like, oh, I haven't used a C. Okay, Cole it is. I know it's so unimaginative, and but seriously, that's how I pick my names, and it works.
Yeah, so what about the heroine? What's her name in this story? Obviously,
Her
it's
name
not
is
going to start with
Kinsey.
C.
Yeah, no, it doesn't start with a C. It starts with a K. And her name is Kinsey. And when I was writing the proposal to turn in to my publisher to say, hey, I have a new proposal, come buy it. I had just gone through and picked all my heroines' names. And I like Kinsey. For some reason, I like Kinsey. You know what I was thinking, though? I think I was thinking about Kinsey. Kind of picturing her, the woman, the actress, I can't remember her real name, but she's Kinsey on NCIS Los Angeles. And I liked that show before it went stupid. But in the beginning, I really liked it a lot, and I liked her character a lot. And so I think I kind of picked her name based on that.
Ah, I love those kind of connections. So let's talk about Cole. What's holding
Okay.
you back from finding love?
Oh yes. So Cole is he I made him kind of different. Kind of like most male characters, not most, but some, they're like, oh, I'm single forever, I'm not interested in finding love, I'll just, be alone forever kind of thing. I think that they say that, but deep down they feel much differently, obviously, or wouldn't have romance. Anyway, and so with him, I just kind of wanted him to be open with it, and let that make me, hey, yeah, I'm ready to settle down. I've done my, I was a player in the past, but now I'm ready to find that person and settle down and figure out what God wants for my life, and have someone to do that with. So anyway, I just thought it was kind of different and cool.
Yeah, no, I love that. So what about your villain? Why this person as your villain?
When I write my stories, my villains never wind up being who I started with generally. I try because, I mean, if I'm confused about it, then, or I don't know who it is. I'm hoping the reader doesn't either. And so, but by the time I got about three quarters of the way through this book, I was like, okay. I like this person for the villain instead. And so I went back through the story thinking, how much am I going to have to change? And it's weird. It just worked out that I didn't have to change that much. And I was able to make the villain the villain. And it just, I can't really explain why it just worked.
Yeah, I'm with you. That happens to me sometimes too. So
Yeah.
the setting, now this is the book two in your series. So why pick this setting for this series, this book?
So the setting is fiction, a fictional place. I tend to write in North Carolina, South Carolina, Georgia, Tennessee, the states that I'm most familiar with. And so I love writing in North Carolina. I love the mountains. I love the weather. I mean, one minute you're going to have 85 degree weather, and then you have a thunderstorm and it'll be 45 degree weather. You just never know. So you can play with that and use the setting to your advantage, especially hills and mountains and curvy roads and and that kind of thing. So I really like using that setting simply so that I can use it as part of the, I guess, as just kind of like another character. It can be good for the story. It can be great. I can have it sunny and warm for the winter, or I can like have it stormy and have them caught in the rain. It can snow, and I don't know. Southern weather is so crazy in this part of the world. I can pretty much have it do whatever I want and still be believable.
Yes, yeah. As someone who writes mostly in Virginia, I totally understand.
Oh yeah.
Totally understand.
Yeah, you get it.
Yeah. So what was it about this particular storyline that you wanted to write? Why this storyline?
It's funny. I don't know. It
Yeah.
just again, if I'm such an instinctual writer. Is that a word? And my brain goes in certain directions, and I just let it go sometimes to see what it's going to come up with. And I'm a big fan of that SWAT show with Shemar Moore, and is that how you say his name? Shemar Moore. Anyway, and I just really kind of wanted to base a book sort of along those lines, and this seemed to be the story to do that with. And so it just unfolded that way.
I love it. I often get inspiration from TV shows too. So mine are mostly British though. I'm a little secret box, but anyway, storylines are storylines. So we are almost out of time, Lynette. So what is one thing that you want readers to know about Target Acquired?
It's a little different than my usual because I do a little time split thing. Like I have a little bit in the past, not as much as a normal dual time story, but I do slip into the past a little bit and then back into the present, and in the end I do tie it all together. So it's a little different. It's not a true time story, but it's definitely a little bit of one.
Yeah, great. Well, thank you for sharing today about your story.
Absolutely. Thank you for having me. I appreciate it.
Thanks for listening to The Romantic Side of Suspense with Sarah Hammerker. If you enjoyed this episode, please leave a review. You can sign up to receive notifications of upcoming podcasts and listen to previous editions at sarahhammerkerfiction.com.